Welcome to the FTN NBA Podcast with your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer and Joe Metz. Presented by the FTN Network, this two-man fast break runs you through the best cash and tournament options for every game on today's slate.
What's up, everybody? Hopefully everyone had a great weekend out there. We are back with the FTN Fantasy NBA Podcast. It is the best month of the year, Joe. It's March. We got March Madness. You got my birthday. You got my birthday. March, best month of the year. We made it. What's up, man? How was your weekend? It was your birthday this past weekend. Happy belated. Still shocked that I'm a year older than you somehow.
I know. I turned 26 on Saturday. Didn't do much besides throw a few back and watch basketball. So I dubbed that a successful birthday. Also had a solo stream.
I caught that
with Kuisenberg. So that was fun. Looking forward to the obviously this is our last week before the All-Star break, so full week of basketball, and we have a good, like, a healthy slate just about every day instead of that, you know, like 9 games, 3 games, 10 games, 4 games. Like, it's a pretty even,
and it's better on us because it randomly, you don't have a 10-game slate to write up, and the next day I don't have three games or vice versa. So
exactly,
that's always nice too. This appears on the surface to be a 7-game slate. But we have the Denver and Chicago game where we got reports that somebody on Denver was placed on the health protocol list. So that game could be up in the air right now. So we'll break it down, but of course keep an eye on it. It's very possible that game doesn't get played. But there's still other games. And we'll start with this one, which I think might be the most interesting on the slate given all the news, right? Indiana at Philadelphia. Philadelphia coming off a overtime loss to the Cleveland Cavaliers, who are 2-0 against the Sixers this year. With an asterisk, because the first game Joel Embiid didn't play, and the second one Tobias didn't play, but we'll take it. But Tobias and Embiid, both questionable. Tobias missed that last game with a minor knee injury, and then Embiid apparently dealing with ankle soreness. So, obviously, this game drastically changes if they miss, or even if just one of them misses, right? Tobias out last game, Furkan Korkmaz got the start, but he only played like 20 minutes. He saw Shake Milton, Danny Green, and Seth Curry all play huge minutes. Let's start there, because I think there, if I had a guess, there'd be a better chance that Tobias hits over Embiid. But like you said, the Sixers have, what, 2 games this week and then the All-Star break?
Yeah.
They're sitting comfortably in the one seed. I know the Pacers are, you know, in their conference and whatever, but like, they could easily just say, all right, we got the All-Star break coming up. Let's not risk anything. Let's sit these guys down. So I do think it's possible that both these guys sit. If they both sit, how many Sixers do we like? Because it's interesting, because this team, even without those guys, they don't have a lot of high usage players, right? Danny Green's not a high usage player. Mm-hmm. He's catch and shoot guy. Seth Curry's a little bit more high usage, but more of the same a little bit. It's really, and Ben Simmons, as good as he is in fantasy, he's not a relatively high usage player. Shake Milton's their high usage guy. He's a 31% usage rate with these guys off the floor. It's the highest rate in the team. What do we do with the Sixers here?
It's tough because we haven't really seen a situation where both Embiid and Harris are out. You know, that last game that Tobias Harris set out, both Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons played over 40 minutes. Seth Curry played over 38. Danny Green, 36. Shake Milton, 31. So there's there will be more minutes to go around, especially in the front court. Obviously, Joel Embiid, always a very high usage player. 22 shots, 16 free throw attempts in the last game.
Also, apparently, he shouldn't be an MVP candidate for that.
Yeah,
I saw your
tweet.
I saw your tweet.
I hate, that's like saying, well, Steph Curry wouldn't be an MVP if you take away the three. Like, it doesn't matter. That's like why he's so good. I can't stand when people pick people's games apart like that. Anyways,
I'm sure you also can't stand that because maybe the most popular of those kind of takes is, oh, if Giannis wasn't 6'10 with a 7'5 wingspan and really athletic, he wouldn't be good. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Like,
he is,
okay,
though.
If you don't want him to get to the rim, stop him.
People said, like, that about Shaq for a while, too. And they were like, Shaq wouldn't be as good if he wasn't 7'4, 3'20. I was like, but he is.
But he is. And two, like, you know, they say, well, he wouldn't be that good if he couldn't get to the rim. Well, he gets to the rim at will because he is that good. Like,
yeah, I hate the Giannis isn't actually good at basketball takes. I think they're absolutely egregious, but I digress.
Like, no, okay, so you want someone that's like athletic, that's not good at basketball? It's not Giannis, it's Thonmaker. Like, it's just a drastic difference between the two, and I had to painfully sit through it for like 3 years as a Bucks fan.
Right. KJ McDaniels, super athletic,
yeah,
was not good at basketball.
Exactly. Like there is a massive difference. And like you've obviously seen the strides Giannis takes, you know, year over year. He's a good
literally and
basketball player.
figuratively.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, it was amazing. But anyways, yeah, so much Giannis talking, that makes me so happy. But I mean, if just Tobias Harris is out, you know, I have a hard time not going back to Joel Embiid just because the floor only gets higher. And this is a matchup. Obviously, Miles Turner is not a center to go out of your way to attack, but Joel Embiid is not a center that you really dictate based on matchup alone. So I think it is one where we would see him around the rim much more. He has the ability to go out to the perimeter on both ends of the court, both defensively and offensively. So, you know, a center like Miles Turner, who takes his fair share of three-pointers, that wouldn't really deter Joel Embiid from any additional playing time or anything like that. So I think this is a fine matchup for Embiid. It gets tricky, you know, if he's out, because this Indy defense is pretty good. They're not like a, you know, an elite defensive unit, but they're
If
typically
Brogdon's out, they take. We'll talk about that
correct. They
obviously,
take
but if Brogdon's out, it
a
takes a
massive hit
huge,
if
huge
Brogdon's
step
out.
back.
But if
Which is
he's
why this
in,
game is so interesting.
yep, exactly. So obviously, if Embiid and Harris are out, Ben Simmons is going to be under a microscope. 8,800. It is hard to argue with that price. Like we saw a game where he can just completely take over. That game against Utah where he had 42 points, 12 rebounds, or excuse me, 12 assists and 9 rebounds. He has the ability to become a high usage ball dominant player when he needs to. This would be a situation where he needs to, and given his size, a matchup with Brogdon doesn't necessarily deter me from Ben Simmons at 8,800. Where it gets interesting to me is, you know, you obviously then default to a Seth Curry, who would probably become a very, very volume heavy player. You default to a Shake Milton, who with both Tobias Harris and Joel Embiid off the floor in 230 minutes this year has a usage rate over 30%. Tyrese Maxey usage rate over 27% in these situations. So it's not necessarily going to be these direct positional beneficiaries. You just need to look for the most ball dominant players. It's typically going to be the guards. So if both, you know, Harris and Embiid sit, I wouldn't be surprised to see Simmons start at the three or the four again. He started at the four when Furkan took over in the starting lineup for Harris. So I think we'd see something similar than with either Dwight or Tony Bradley starting at the five.
Yeah, I think this game becomes a lot more interesting, obviously, if Embiid's out, because the Sixers will play faster. I mean, no team posts up more than Philadelphia, obviously, with Embiid, but with him out, they'll play a lot faster, and their offense will all of a sudden become Milwaukee-esque, right?
Yeah,
Like fast paced Ben Simmons pushing the floor and kicking it out to Danny Green and Seth Curry, which makes them more interesting because if they're like Embiid is not when Embiid's in the offense, this is a get out of the way and let him get his buckets. But if he's out, there's going to be more opportunities for these shooters, and the Pacers are a bad spot up defense. So I think if Embiid and Harris are out, one of Danny Green or Seth Curry, or even Korkmaz, who I don't really want to play because I don't know if I trust the minutes, are going to go off if they're going to keep this game close or at least make it a game. Because the Pacers this season, like I said, they're a bad spot-up defense. They give up the fifth most points per game to spot-up shooters at just over 32 per game and the second most points per possession. You have Seth Curry, who is top 20 in points per game off spot-ups this year at 4.3. And then Danny Green's averaging 6.1 points per game off catch-and-shoot opportunities. That's top 20 in the league. So I think they could both be interesting. And as I mentioned, and you mentioned, like Shake Milton is probably the best play if just Tobias is out, because he actually handles the ball with that second unit. And the thing with Shake Milton is, when he comes in the game, they usually leave Tobias in with him, so he is a direct. That's why his usage rate's so high. He's a direct. He plays directly with Tobias Harris a lot, so that would be perfect for Shake Milton. I'd have a lot of interest in him. Before we get to the Pacers, if Embiid's out and Dwight Howard starts, 3,500. We know there's been some games this year where he starts and Tony Bradley gets run or vice versa, but in four starts this season, Dwight's averaging 8.3 points, 9 rebounds, and a block per game. He's 3,500. Also has a 45% rebounding rate with Tobias and Joel Embiid off the floor this season.
Yeah, that's it'd be hard for me not to get there again. Like, especially when you're playing a center that does sit around the rim as much as Miles Turner, that's obviously going to cater to a center like Dwight Howard. So, I'm okay with it. And obviously, even if he does split the minutes with Tony Bradley, which we really haven't seen, you know, in games Embiid has been out this year, we haven't seen Doc go with like a straight up like 28, 20 minute kind of distribution, or even a 24, 24. It's typically been, one getting about 25 minutes, the other getting about like 15, and them going small for the remaining roughly 10 minutes of the game. So I think whoever starts, my guess is going to be Howard, I think is an incredibly strong per dollar play, especially because obviously if Embiid's out, that's usage to go around. But if Tobias Harris is out, like, just because these guys are not ball dominant, like, shots are going to fall in their hand when 40 shots open up on the offense.
Let's go to the Pacers side. They're pretty banged up too. Malcolm Brogdon missed Saturday's game. He's questionable. We saw TJ McConnell get the start. He didn't play 2 minutes. He was on the floor the rest of the game. 46 minutes for TJ McConnell in their last game. 17 points, 12 assists, 6 rebounds. I don't think we should project 46 minutes from TJ McConnell again, but if Brogdon and Jeremy Lamb, who picked up an injury on Saturday, are both out again, with still no Caris LeVert, I mean, he's going to play high 30s. 6,100 may seem like a lot, but this is a guy who he does all the facilitating for this team when Brogdon's off the floor. 33% assist rate. And as I mentioned, Brogdon fifth in the league in touches per game. Like, against his former team, like, McConnell at 6,100, I don't think is too much if Malcolm Brogdon's out. I really don't.
I don't either.
Do we think he plays 46 minutes again? Probably not. That was insane.
But the thing is, like, he can, that stat line that you rattled off, like, that's something he can get in 32 minutes with this
Oh,
guy off,
yeah,
with Brogdon off the
he's
court.
Always
So, like,
been a really good rebounder and assist player per minute. And
he
we talked
always
about
has, like,
the Pacers are playing
seven
faster this
steals.
year too.
Yeah. And he has seven steals in his last three games. So, like, he does contribute just about every category on the stat sheet. So I absolutely love TJ McConnell. He's $6,100 on both sites. And the one thing I'm struggling to gauge right now is how high owned I think he'll be, especially if, Embiid and Harris find themselves out of this game. I just have a hard time, regardless of the production that would open up for McConnell, seeing people stomach $6,100 for him. I think there would be a level of sticker shock. Game log chasers would probably be okay with it, but I don't think he would get too chalky at this price where
No.
it would really kind of work me off. And, like, if he, this would be a different conversation if he was like 4,800, but this is a perfectly fine, he seems like a rock solid cash game play if Malcolm Brogdon's out.
I agree. And I think there's still more term and upside than other people might
Agreed.
think. If Jeremy Lamb's also out, I mean, Justin Holiday's 5,100. He would play 32 to 35 minutes, I would say. He'd be okay. And then obviously Sabonis. Sabonis is interesting because, like, he's 10-1, so he's already priced pretty much right around where he normally is or where he should be. I would like Sabonis obviously more. If Joel Embiid's out, the matchup's obviously better. The Sixers with Embiid off the floor, if you look at our on-off split tool on FTN, their defensive rating drops by, what is it, 8 points with Embiid off the floor, and almost 9 points, and their plus minus drops by over 12. So obviously
Which
he's
that basically takes him from a top tier defense to like a bottom third.
exactly it like it's that drastic of a difference. But if Brogdon's out and Embiid plays, I think Sabonis is fine, but I'm not like running to Sabonis because Brogdon's out. Like, there's still, we'll talk about Vucevic at that price range. We'll talk about some other players. Like, I think he's fine, but I don't, if Embiid's in, I'm still not running to Domantas Sabonis. What do you think about him and any other Pacers we haven't touched on?
No, I think you summed up Sabonis perfectly. He's fine. Like, he could, if Brogdon and Jeremy Lamb are out, he should see probably over like 120 touches in this game, which is absurd. But again, 10-1 is still, I don't know if it's sticker shock with me
Oh,
for
by the way,
Sabonis.
speaking of touches, TJ McConnell had 124 in their last game.
Holy cow.
Sabonis had 109. So, like,
Interesting.
it's like the same thing almost. But, like, I still can't believe TJ McConnell played 46 minutes.
I'm gonna be honest. When's the last time you saw a player in the NBA play 46 minutes?
In a regular season game. Yeah, exactly. And I looked, I was like, this game went to overtime, right? Nope.
That's insane. Like, I bet the last time we saw that maybe like a prime LeBron playoff game. But I cannot sit here and say I remember any regular season game where any player logged 46 out of 48 minutes in a game that did not go to overtime. But hey, that YMCA TJ, that's how a player like him keeps himself in the league. But Sabonis, I'm not going to argue with you if you go to him, but much like you, I'm not going to go out of my way, drop my things and run to play him, especially at 10-1 when, like, you know, someone like you said, Nikola Vucevic, you know, you have the guys on Brooklyn who are around that 10K mark. Like, we're at a point now where you're paying less than $1,000 to go from Domantas Sabonis to James Harden. And that's when you look at the price relative to these other superstars, that's where it's a little harder to stomach, because Harden has legitimate 100 DK point upside. Sabonis does not. So I get the play. I won't argue with you if you play him. I just won't go there. I will target TJ McConnell as my preferred option. I also think there is merit to Miles Turner at $6,200 too.
All right, let's go to Dallas and Orlando. The Mavericks got Kristaps Porzingis back over the weekend. He's probable with that back injury that kept him out, so he should be good to go. And then the rest of this game, you know, Orlando has been missing their guys. This game's really simple for me. I already started the game-by-game article. This game did not take long. Luka's 10-7. Is this the best matchup in the world or the most exciting game? No, Orlando plays slow. Both these teams really have, like, three players that you, like, really like for fantasy, and the rest is kind of meh, like maybe four or five total if you want to really break it down. I don't love Porzingis on the slate. I think he's priced appropriately or maybe a little bit underpriced, and I think he's safe, but is there a huge ceiling in this spot? I don't know. You can play Luka any slate. Do I like him over James Harden on this slate? I don't, but I will always play Luka, you know, like, especially when he's under 11K, like, I always have some exposure to Luka. And then for Orlando, I mean, it's Vucevic, right? I mean, coming off another huge game, the Magic continue to play through him, obviously. Over the last 2 weeks, Nikola Vucevic has a 33% usage rate and a 34% rebounding rate. Dallas is a defense that we don't worry about with centers very much. They're a bad pick-and-roll defense. They give up the fifth most points per game to opposing roll men out of the pick-and-roll at 8.6 per game, and Vooch is second in pick-and-roll scoring as the roll man in all of basketball. So it's another great spot for Vooch. For me, it's kind of like three players in this game, and maybe Dorian Finney-Smith at 4,600 in cash, just because he plays 35 minutes in any competitive game. Where are you at in this game?
Similar. I think 10-7 for Luka is ultimately too cheap regardless of the matchup. Obviously, Orlando plays at a slow pace, but their defense is markedly worse without Markelle Fultz and Aaron Gordon there. I'm not going to throw Cole Anthony in that bucket, because Cole Anthony isn't necessarily a worthwhile defender, but that's also, like, Cole Anthony's absence and Markelle Fultz's absence is a reason why the pace is going to be even slower than Orlando typically runs. So it's going to be a half-court game. Luka can still thrive in those games. He's just not going to benefit from those additional possessions he would in a pace-up game. So I'm fine with him, but like yourself, I would not prioritize him over Harden. I don't mind Porzingis at his price at 8-2 on DraftKings. He is incrementally cheaper on FanDuel at 7-8. It just feels a little more appealing on a site that forces you to roster two power forwards and also rewards you a bit more for blocks. So I do think he has some upside there, assuming he's a full go. And then obviously Vucevic, like, Dallas gets absolutely brutalized around the rim and in the restricted area. Vucevic is going to command the lion's share of the usage. He is probably a surefire bet for 45 plus fantasy points. I would prefer Vucevic for 10-2 over Sabonis for 10-1. Outside of those three, I don't really think I'd get anywhere. I'm with Porzingis back, I don't see a reason to go like THJ, to go Josh Richardson, because those guys just aren't going to get those 12-plus shots they would when Porzingis,
like,
was out.
Yeah, like Tim Hardaway Jr. and Josh Richardson, Dorian Finney-Smith all have like the same ceiling. I don't want to say same ceiling, because if THJ gets hot, he has a higher ceiling. They all have I think they have similar floors, but I like Dorian Finney-Smith's floor a little bit better because he's a lock for 33 minutes or so, and he's, I think, cheaper than all three of them, or at least they're right around the same price. So, yeah, this is definitely not my favorite game of the slate. To be pretty honest. Anything else we didn't talk about? I will add Evan Fournier at 6,700. Like, he's more viable at this price than he would have been if Orlando was healthy, because as we talked about, his peripherals have been much better since Aaron Gordon and these guys have been out. But not a core play for me or anything.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, Denver at Chicago. We'll talk about this game briefly, but we got a report from, I believe it was Woj, that somebody on Denver has been placed on the health protocol list. So this game could be postponed. We'll have to keep an eye on it. But luckily, this game's pretty simple too, right? Nikola Jokic against Chicago. Jamal Murray, who's on fire against Chicago, who's dead last defending ball handlers out of the pick and roll. They're terrible against point guards, and Jamal Murray's been on a tear. If this game plays, feel free to play them. I mean, we still have Paul Millsap, JaMychal Green, Gary Harris. These guys are all out still for Denver.
It's hard. This matchup is, especially for guys of the skill set of Jokic and Murray, and I would even throw Michael Porter Jr. in here. The issue with Michael Porter Jr., especially on DraftKings, is a $7,000 price tag. I'd probably throw him in strictly on FanDuel, where he's $6,500. It's just such an enticing matchup. Massive pace-up spot, lower-tier defense. Like, they will be able to pick this front court apart, pick the back court apart. There's no doubt about it. It's a pretty limited game in terms of options, though. It's those three and then other side of the game. This is really every Chicago game so far this season. To me, when the rotation's healthy, unless there's like a really exploitable matchup down low, it's target a couple of the studs on the other team and run it back with Zach LaVine and move on. Like, LaVine has been absolutely bonkers. He's gone on like scorched earth since the start of February, averaging over 30 points per game and actually allowing
an all-star bid. He had to.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you saw, I tweeted about this earlier, but so there were six players in the league in the month of February that averaged over 30 points a game. I think it was LaVine. LaVine, Giannis, Luka, Beal, Curry, and maybe Harden. It was Embiid. It was Embiid, not Harden. Zach LaVine, of all those players, and I just named Joel Embiid and Giannis in this grouping. Zach LaVine was, while averaging 30 points, allowing the lowest opponent field goal percentage at 30.6%. Like, obviously, that number will probably be broken down into like how many feet are they away from the defender, blah, blah, blah. But point being, like, he has stepped up in every facet of his game this season. He's playing out of his mind. So a matchup with Denver is not one to run away from. He's so much safer than literally everyone else on this team. His ceiling is exponentially higher. So really, why look elsewhere?
Yeah. Keep an eye on this game, though, obviously. Like, there is a very, very strong possibility that it does get postponed. Yep. But if it doesn't, like, that, I kind of agree with you. Like, those are the plays pretty easily. Yep. So let's move on. Utah at New Orleans. We can talk about Zion again. That's fun.
He's finally getting the peripherals. I feel like one of those like crazy plant people that finally sees their like plant blossom and they're like,
yeah, dude, we've been talking about Zion, his potential. Everybody knows his potential as an NBA player. Like, he's probably what, top? Would you put him in your top 20 right now?
I think I would. And if you're taking, like, I mean, we've talked about this before, and I don't mean to gawk over it again. There's not been a single player that has garnered as much hype as Zion since LeBron James, and that's for a reason.
Yeah, there was one play. It was an easy dunk, but he made it look easy because it was like Lonzo drove to the basket and kicked it out to Zion, who, like, without, it didn't even look like he tried. It's a standing dunk from like 2 feet away. I was like, he's not even human. He's unbelievable. He's 9K. Against Utah. It's an interesting spot because Utah is obviously a great defensive team. They have rim protection with Rudy Gobert. I'm just at the point now where it's like Zion is scoring at a ridiculous rate against anybody. Like, he just, you can't meet him at the rim with success consistently. So I kind of still have some interest in Zion here at 9K. Like you said, the peripherals are better. He's not only handling the ball out of the pick and roll more, but they're actually finally running him out of the pick and roll a little bit more as of late. Plus the rebounds have been up, the assists. Like, that's why his assists have been high. He has at least 4 assists in 8 of his last 10 games. And I know 4 doesn't sound like a lot, but when you're talking about a player that really didn't have a lot of peripherals for much of the season, that is noticeable. So
yeah, 100%.
I'm good with Zion at 9K in tournaments. I don't think he's like the priority play we've been talking about for him the last couple weeks, but I think he's still perfectly fine. What about the rest of his team? I mean, Brandon Ingram, 8,400. If I'm going, especially at this point with how they're playing, I would rather go to Zion. I don't think people are going to play Brandon Ingram.
I don't see it either. I mean,
Lonzo
certainly has a ceiling.
Right, and then Lonzo is like a floor play, but at 6,800 against Utah, like, I'll find other players in better matchups with a 34, 33-point floor.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, for me, I typically have more interest in this New Orleans team, but in this matchup, it's really Zion or bust. The New Orleans matchup, obviously they have Gobert around the rim, but, I mean, the Bucks had Giannis around the rim, and he absolutely brutal. Like, he had, like, 27 at halftime. Like, it doesn't – at this point, like, I'm fine dubbing Zion as matchup-proof because all of his shots, like, come within, like, 3 feet of the rim. So – I, at 9K, totally fine going back to the well, and I don't think many people will, especially given the matchup. So I think this is a great spot to get him lower owned, especially with the ceiling that he has been finally demonstrating.
For the Jazz, Mike Conley is not on the injury report ahead of this game. Didn't play in the second half of back-to-back, so he will be good to go, which means Utah's at full strength. Rudy Gobert, priced at 7,400, which is in between that $7,200 to $7,500 price tag he's always at. The Pelicans, bottom five in terms of field goal percentage allowed at the rim this season. They have a lot of players that drive to the basket. I'm not even, like, as a player, like, Rudy Gobert is nowhere near my favorite players in the NBA. But in fantasy, like, I always play him because he's always cheap. He always gives you a high floor with a ceiling potential. And he just always gets overlooked. So, like, I like Rudy Gobert again here as probably my favorite player from this team. What do you think about this team? Jordan Clarkson, by the way, I don't think I can get to him at 6,400, but he had such a good game against Orlando, and my goodness, did he make Michael Carter-Williams fall. That was, I don't know if you saw
that. Holy cow, yeah. I mean, he's got to be locked into sixth man of the year, right?
Yeah, it's the season could end. Like, he could sit out the second half of the season and probably still win it.
Yeah, and I mean, even without individual performance, like someone like Lou Williams just hasn't been doing enough this year. But yeah, I'm kind of following a similar line of thought, especially with Mike Conley active. That takes me off of Joe Ingles. Takes me off
Ingles,
of
Carson. I was about to say Ingles is coming off a good game, but that was with Conley out. Now he's 5,700.
Yeah, like he becomes like the backup point guard and the starting shooting guard when the point guard's out. When you obviously see Donovan Mitchell slide over, but when the point guard's active, you see games like you did against the Lakers where he only played 22 minutes. The game against Miami where he only played 25. So it's really hard to trust him at that elevated $5,700 price tag. I would probably, if choosing between him and Clarkson, I'd feel more comfortable with Clarkson at 6'4". Mitchell at 8'6 is fine, just not a priority for me. And Gobert, like you said, I don't know what he has to do to be priced up. Like, he is a walking double-double, a consistent 20-20 threat, and he's really shown a ceiling this season, that he, like a 60-point ceiling that he really never showed much last season. So at this price, like, I'm totally fine continuing to go back here, especially knowing how much New Orleans is going to get to the rim with someone like Zion. I just don't think the ownership will be there either.
Yeah, this is usually the price tag where I'm okay with Bogdanovich, 5,200. We know he's got a ceiling if he can hit a handful of threes. The minutes should be solid. The peripherals really are there maybe one out of every 10 games, but, like, I don't hate it. And yeah, like, Ingles is too expensive for me. Jordan Clarkson's too expensive for me. Mitchell's priced fairly, and especially if this game becomes a smaller slate where it's six games, I wouldn't mind getting. Like, he's still been over 40 in all the games since Conley's been back, so like he hasn't gone for 50 or 60 yet, but he's still been really good. So I don't hate Mitchell either. Yeah, I'm just waiting for like the Pelicans to have a player that I'm interested in outside of Zion, because it hasn't happened in a little bit.
Yeah, I'll continue. Like, this is a slate where I'm not necessarily interested in Lonzo, but I have had more interest in him lately just because of how many more threes he's shooting, and he's actually converting them at a pretty efficient clip. But this is not a matchup I really want to put my trust into him in.
All right, let's go to Brooklyn and San Antonio. The Spurs obviously dealing with their COVID situations. They got DeRozan and LaMarcus Aldridge back. DeRozan was out for personal reasons. Aldridge was out with an injury, but they came back in their last game. But Keldon Johnson, Rudy Gay, Derek White, all these guys are questionable to play in this game. Devin Vassell, they're all questionable. Then for Brooklyn, we know that Durant's out. Timothy Luau-Cabarro is questionable. Jeff Green is also questionable. For the Spurs, if these guys I mentioned are all out again, how much do we like some of these other Spurs? I mean, DeJounte Murray, 8,100, just great all-around stat lines pretty much every game. The price is high. It's the highest price he's been at all year, and DeRozan is back, and Aldridge is there. But I mean, with no Derek White and no Keldon Johnson potentially, like, and no Devin Vassell, he's going to have to play 36, 37 minutes, whereas he usually plays like 32 to 34.
Yeah, it's
and Brooklyn's such a good matchup.
It's interesting because the last slate, you know, which would have been the second game that San Antonio had experienced those health and safety protocol issues. The expectation going into the slate was that DeMar DeRozan was going to be out. So beginning at the beginning of the day at 7-9, DeJounte Murray was looking like a phenomenal play, and people really jumped ship as soon as DeMar DeRozan was ruled in. I mean, he still posted 45 fantasy points. Like, the absence of the presence, I should say, of DeMar DeRozan, in my opinion, this year hasn't really affected Murray like it has in years past, because we've seen DeRozan slide to the four much more this year, where last year he played more of the 2-3. So he obviously dictated and commanded more of those backcourt touches. Now he's getting more of the assists from Murray when he posts up on the baseline for a fadeaway, or when he's cutting off ball slash into the rim. So Murray is involved a lot more in the plays, as opposed to DeRozan bringing the ball up when Murray's on the court. So I still like him as long as he's in this 33-plus minute threshold. He's an elite per-minute producer, and you really cannot find a better matchup for someone not only on the offensive end, but someone that was an all-defensive player the year before, or the year before he tore his ACL. Now he gets the chance to take on either James Harden or Kyrie Irving just about every minute he's on the floor, and has a heightened ceiling in terms of defensive peripherals. So I still like him a lot, and I don't expect the ownership to be there. I actually think DeMar DeRozan will probably be a little bit higher owned for only $300 more.
Yeah, DeRozan, 11 assists last game. He was fantastic. Only had one rebound, but 32 points on 11 of 18 shooting. I remember DeRozan when he was with Toronto was like 10-plus free throws every game. Like, he was one of the best in the league. He's been a little bit more inconsistent with that, but I think a lot of that is because, like you said, he's playing a lot more power forward. But, again, assuming all these guys are out, I think both DeRozan at 8,400 and Murray at 8,100 are both firmly in play. Lonnie Walker, I had interest at 4,300, but then he got priced up to 5K. He didn't have a great game. Like, I don't think he's a bad play. I don't think he's like a must play either. Like, I almost would rather go to Patty Mills at 4,700, who, if Derek White's out, will probably play close to 30 minutes himself. He's a solid fantasy point per minute guy. And then there's the LaMarcus Aldridge situation. He's 6,200, which for me, like, he's just being used in a way he hasn't been. Like, he's being used as a pick and roll, but he's being used as a roll man. He's not picking and popping, and he's not posting up as much. He's shooting more threes off spot ups, and he's rolling as out of the pick and roll, which is just, especially at this point of his career, just not what you want him to do. And it, like, even with these guys out, like, the minutes aren't great. He's taking like 10 shots a game. If this was LaMarcus Aldridge from his first couple of years with the Spurs, where he was posting up almost as much as Embiid, it's a great spot because Brooklyn allows the second most post up points per game in all of basketball. And that's not to say he won't post up at all in this game, and the usage should be okay. Mm-hmm. But he's a guy that I haven't played this year unless DeMar DeRozan's been out.
Yeah, I've been in the same boat. Even at this price, like, the rebounds aren't there, which we could obviously see a bit of an uptick against a smaller front court. But even with how thin this Spurs team is over these last two games, he hasn't topped 26 minutes in either game. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that all of the depth issues are coming from the backcourt. It's Devin Vassell at the two. It's Derek White at the one and two. It's Keldon Johnson plays a bit more of a three than he does the four because of DeRozan sliding to the four. It's not really the four or five. Like, they still have Jakob Poeltl, they still have Trey Lyles, they still have LaMarcus Aldridge. So that rotation isn't changing enough for me to really warrant going out of my way to play him at $6,200, even in this matchup. I just feel so much more confident in the DeRozan and Deontay Murray combo.
For Brooklyn, Kevin Durant obviously going to be out still. James Harden, 11K. Kyrie Irving, 9,100. Both really strong plays. I don't really think we need to tell you much about playing them. Stop many time.
It's at this point, like, 11K is fair for James Harden. You can argue it's a bit too cheap. What does Kyrie Irving have to do to get a price bump?
He did. The problem is it was like $100 or $200.
It was $200. Like, I don't, like, right. I said it, the slate against Sacramento. His floor right now is over 40 fantasy points at $9,100. Yeah. You will live with that every day.
Good matchup for him, too. Dimers, 25th against Dimers, 25th against primary ball handlers, and then 21st against both scorers and crafty finishers are the Spurs. So,
yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, like one of the, I think based on early roster construction, if I'm not playing James Harden, it's not hard to fit like a, because Kyrie now has obviously the shooting guard eligibility. It's not hard to fit him next to Dejounte Murray and potentially DeMar DeRozan. So if you want to anchor your lineup with a bit more balance, I think that's a really high floor, high ceiling way to do so.
We haven't really talked about it much because this is a two-man show right now, literally for us and the Nets. But Bruce Brown's played really well for Brooklyn as of late. He's scored at least 27 fantasy points in four straight games. $5,400 though, $5,400 though is really tough to get to. And then DeAndre Jordan, like I can't trust him at 5'5", even with Jeff Green potentially out. I just haven't done it. Won't do it here. Then Joe Harris, like if he's hitting his shots, he'll have a chance to go for like 35 fantasy points. But a lot of players can go for 35 fantasy points at 5,600. So, anybody else on Brooklyn?
Not really. Joe Harris is more appealing on FanDuel at 4,700. The issue is he obviously doesn't get that three-point bonus, but it is such a thin position where at small forward, I think you can go there. I just don't have interest in him at this price on DraftKings unless one of James Harden or Kyrie Irving would be out where he's forced into that secondary scorer role.
All right, two games left. Cleveland at the Houston Rockets. Houston played on Sunday. Victor Oladipo was out. He didn't play against the Grizzlies with a quad injury. We'll see if he can get back in there on Monday. This game's interesting because you have the Houston Rockets giving up 22.3 transition points per game, most in the NBA. The Cleveland Cavaliers at 21.9, second most in the NBA. So both teams, this dates back to last year as well, have struggled to defend opposing offenses in the fast break. And Cleveland's defense, as I talked about over the last month, has just fallen off a cliff. They are nowhere near as good. There's a lot of interest for me in this game. I like Sexton a lot in this spot, especially if Oladipo's out. You talked about their splits with him off the floor since he's been on the Rockets. Sexton,
they're so bad.
Yeah, Sexton was, shooting-wise, like 11 to 27, not as good as I thought he'd be. But he also was better in fantasy as I thought than I thought he'd be against Ben Simmons and company. 43 fantasy points at 7,500. Colin Sexton is a guy who leads the Cavs in transition scoring at 5 points per game. That number is also tied for eighth best in basketball. So this is a really nice spot for Colin Sexton. You have Jared Allen, who's been nothing short of sensational since becoming the full-time starter. Last game against Embiid was his worst game during that stretch, but he still scored almost 34 fantasy points. He's double-doubled in every game, and he's averaging like 21 or 22 rebounding opportunities per game since Drummond has been taken out of the lineup. 8,500 seems like a lot for Jared Allen.
But it seems like a lot.
But here's the thing.
Houston has gotten absolutely destroyed by Sennett.
I wrote about this yesterday or today. They're back to being a team that doesn't have a traditional center, right? DeMarcus Cousins is waived, Christian Wood's hurt, and now they're playing P.J. Tucker and Jae'Sean Tate at the five again. Like,
yeah, exactly. I mean, like, typically lineups like this will cause the opposing team to go small at center, but right now, given Cleveland's injury situation, they don't have, like, the Larry Nance to do so, and they're not going to throw, like, Dean Wade at center. So you have a matchup advantage where you basically have a 6'6", 6'8", P.J. Tucker trying to defend – you know, a massive man in Jared Allen. That's like Josh Kelce trying to ride the rides at Six Flags. Like, it's just not going to fly. Like, they're bottom 10 in the NBA against both rebounders, they're 23rd, and against it lists them as bench players in ADVP. Obviously, we know Jared Allen isn't a bench player.
Right.
But, like, every archetype that Jared Allen has right now, Houston is getting absolutely dominated by in the post. P.J. Tucker, he's a good defender against – I mean, he's a good defender in general, but good defender against stretch centers. But, like, Jared Allen should be able to get whatever rebound he wants. And I apologize, but it was just way too easy.
Man, you go on the dude's podcast and then just rip him back when you get back in your own in your own house.
I know.
But I agree. I just don't – like, we have to understand that Houston is back to playing that small ball lineup, and – Jared Allen, regardless, is still going to play huge minutes in this game. I expect the game to be close. So I love Jared Allen. I love Sexton. Mm-hmm. Garland's coming off a nice fantasy performance. He's 6,900. I would rather play Sexton, but we know that when these two are healthy, they're both going to play huge minutes. I prefer Sexton. I don't hate Garland, though. Anybody else on Cleveland stand out? Like, Isaac Okoro has been playing huge minutes as of late. He's coming off maybe his best game ever, which ever is 30 games in the NBA. But
I mean, he showed a lot more per minute production upside than he has. But obviously that was with Torian Prince and Jetty Osman out. He's questionable right now.
I think he got listed as probable before, like 10-15 minutes before we started recording, and I don't think it's changed yet. So I believe Chetty is probable.
With he's back, Torian Prince isn't on the injury report. I don't think you need to go to Isaac Okoro, especially since his price has risen to 5K now. Like, with his permanent production overall this season, I think that's just a really, really bad floor play. So it's really just Colin Sexton and Darius Garland for me because of the pace of this game. Darius Garland's a bit more enticing on FanDuel, where he's not 6'9", he's 6'4". So I think he makes for a good second point guard on FanDuel. And then obviously Colin Sexton is a fine shooting guard at 7'1" on FanDuel as well, with obviously massive scoring upside in this game, especially in the transition.
For Houston, we'll see what happens tonight, and we'll see what happens to Victor Oladipo's status. But if Oladipo's out, I mean, John Wall, since joining the Rockets, with Oladipo off the floor, has like a 36% usage rate. It's ridiculous. He's another guy that can definitely be productive and get his in transition. So I would have a lot of interest in John Wall. Oladipo, too. I mean, Oladipo is averaging like 4.5 transition points per game since joining the team at 7,700. I wouldn't hate him either if he's active. We'll have to see, though. Who do you like from the Rockets side?
So I think it depends. I mean, one, Houston got absolutely shelled by the Grizzlies on Sunday. Like, this game, they had 39 points almost halfway through the third quarter.
Yeah.
It was an awful, awful game. I would expect Victor Oladipo to come back because obviously his injury is maintenance and rest related with his right quad. So 7,700 for Oladipo is a really nice price against a team that really struggles in transition defense. I do, though, think his return obviously spells a bit of the Eric Gordon ceiling at 6,300. So I'm off of Eric Gordon, but Oladipo in the transition, obviously we know that's where John Wall thrives. 8,300 is a fine price because his usage rate is still really, really high without Christian Wood and DeMarcus Cousins on the court. Obviously takes a bit of a hit with Oladipo, but I still think you can get away with one or potentially both of them. I don't know if I'll get to Daniel House at 5'7". I don't know if I'll get to David Nwaba at 4'7" with Oladipo back. And I don't know if I'll get to Jayshon Tate at 5'9". These prices just feel a bit inflated, especially on the second end of a back-to-back. Obviously, I would expect them to perform better than they did on Sunday. I mean, it won't take much for them to, but their prices are still just too high for me.
All right, let's close it out with Charlotte at Portland. Charlotte also playing tonight. They played, what,
Sacramento? Yeah, they're playing right now.
So,
Eight-man rotation, too. They are really missing a lot of bodies.
Yeah, I mean, Devontae Graham hasn't played since Valentine's Day. We'll see if he can play here. But, like you said, they're missing a lot of guys tonight. Gordon Hayward, I believe, didn't play with a hand
Cody
injury.
Cody Zeller was out.
Yeah, so we'll have to see what happens with Charlotte. But, you know, ahead of this game, we know they have a good matchup against Portland. They had a good matchup tonight, too. They're kind of tough to break down right now. Like, LaMelo and Rozier at 8'7 and 8K respectively, if Graham and Hayward are out again against Portland. Like, I'm good with that, especially as a late night hammer. Like, Zeller didn't play. PJ Washington would obviously get a bump. Like, it's kind of tough to break this team down right now, but if the guys that were out Sunday are out again, you kind of know where to go.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it would be very easy to go to PJ Washington once again. I think it'd be very easy to go right back to LaMelo Ball. And I think you could get away with a little bit of Terry Rozier. I've just been a little hesitant with Rozier ever since his price has really climbed. I think it dipped below 8K for Sunday's game, but it was hovering around or above that 8K range.
Who did they start tonight, by the way? It was LaMelo, Rozier. I know Bismack started at the 5, and then was it Washington
Bismack,
and Bridges?
PJ, Bridges did not start. They started, I'm pulling it up right now. They started Rozier, Ball, Biyombo, Jaden McDaniels, and PJ Washington. So they went a little bigger, and they obviously have Cody Martin. They have Miles Bridges and Malik Monk off the bench. And that is the extent of their rotation for Sunday. So obviously
it could be similar if these guys are out.
I still like this matchup is a really good matchup in all facets. 8K for Terry Rozier just scares me a lot because of his floor, and he's shown that floor, especially relative to this price, for three games in a row at 8K on a relatively full slate with good spend up options. You need like 50 fantasy points to be comfortable with him in your lineup. Otherwise, you're not going to be really satisfied. So I just don't think you need to go there. I'd rather spend up a bit more to get to LaMelo Ball at 8-7 on DraftKings. I do think Terry Rozier has some more appeal on FanDuel, where he's only 6,800. That $1,200 price discrepancy is pretty big. And LaMelo Ball is only 7,900 over there. So I think they're both viable. Malik Monk, obviously viable. He's a consistent 20-point threat off the bench. Then I'll be fine going right back to P.J. Washington and Miles Bridges. I actually have not played much Bismack Biyombo this season at all. I didn't play him Sunday. I didn't play him in their first game when he came off the bench. I do think he'll start against Portland and Enes Kanter because it is a more traditional center matchup. I just don't see the production being enough for me to really want to get there.
He played.
You don't need to.
They just finished the first quarter. He played 10 minutes. LaMelo played 10 minutes. That led the team. But yeah, like you said, it's an 8-man rotation, and the guys that haven't entered the game yet, I believe, are all out: Graham, Zeller, Martin, and Hayward. So if Bismack starts again, I think he'd be a viable value play. It'd be interesting to see where people go between him and Dwight Howard if Embiid's out and Zeller's out for this game. So yeah, keep an eye on that. We'll see what happens with the rest of this game. And they just started
it's a very
the
high
quarter.
Scoring game too. It's
Buddy Hield had 19 in the first quarter.
Yeah, I faded Buddy Hield for Eric Gordon last minute. Eric Gordon had less than 10 fantasy points.
By the way, in case you're new to this show, I mean, just play 3-point shooters against Charlotte. Buddy's 5-7 from three.
So, I mean, I guess that leads us. What are you doing with Damian Lillard? Are you just full locking him in tomorrow?
I mean, yes, but it's also just because, like, he's Damian Lillard,
yeah.
Right? Like, it makes me more interested in Gary Trent because we know he's doing a lot of production from three. He's taken at least 11 threes. Or at least 10 threes in five straight games. Now, he hasn't been hitting a lot of them, but clearly, like, I love Gary Trent. Gary Trent, legit, one of my favorite plays the entire slate. He's going to play 35 to 37 minutes in a close game. He's going to take 16 to 20 shots, and 8 to 11 of them are going to be from three. 40-plus percent of the points scored against Charlotte have come from three, a top three rate in the NBA. They play a lot of zone. We see what Buddy Hield's doing right now. I love Gary Trent. 6K, the price really doesn't move. He hasn't been great lately. He's been under 30 fantasy points in four straight. Don't care. Love Gary Trent here. He's actually my favorite play from this entire game.
Yeah, I in a vacuum, I like Lillard more for obvious reasons, but Gary Trent is not going to carry ownership at 6K, and I really think he should. The volume is insane. Obviously, you hit on the fact that he's taken 11-plus three-pointers in five straight games, but he's flirting with 15 to 20 shots total in each game. The peripherals aren't really there, but in a matchup against a lack of defense against Charlotte, like, you don't really need peripherals to get there at this price. It also makes me like Robert Covington a bit more. I do think we could see him a bit more on the court. He obviously just played 40 minutes against the Lakers, but before that, two games under 30 minutes. I think if we see Charlotte run a chunk of P.J. Washington at the five, we could see Robert Covington play a bit more of the five for Portland.
Yeah.
And he has not been shooting the three ball well, but this is a matchup where if there is a time for him to get right, especially with more minutes, this is one to take advantage of. So I do like Robert Covington now that his price has come down to 5-7.
That's interesting because I was going to ask you about Kanter, because if Zeller's out again, that does hurt Kanter because we could see more remember when Zeller missed that huge chunk of the season?
P.J. Washington at the five.
Yeah, like when Zeller missed that huge chunk of the season earlier on, they were playing a ton of P.J. Washington as a small ball five. And we've seen Portland in plenty of games this year since Nurkic has been out. They've been, when other teams go small, Kanter goes from 32 minutes to 23, 24. And Covington, like you said, plays a lot of small ball five. Even Melo would at sometimes. So that's why Kanter's in tournaments, interesting because it's a great matchup, right? Charlotte, terrible interior defense. They allow the most rebounds per game to opposing centers. But what if he goes from 32 minutes to 26 and Covington plays 40 because he's playing 7 to 12 minutes as a center in this game? That's really interesting to see what happens if Cody Zeller is out, because I think Kanter could go for 40 and 25 minutes in this matchup, and he could also go for 45 or 50 in 32 minutes. I think Kanter is like one of the more interesting tournament plays in the slate because of that.
Yeah, I agree. And I actually think Kanter is going to be one of the more popular center plays on FanDuel specifically. $6,300 on FanDuel is a very stomachable price, right. Excuse me, where he's almost $1,000 more on DraftKings. So I do like him in tournaments on DraftKings. I think you can get away with him in cash games on FanDuel if you're not going up to like a Jared Allen or Nikola, or obviously Nikola Jokic if his game is not canceled. But yeah, I would, in a vacuum, I would rather play Robert Covington because I think there actually is a bit more security in Covington in this game. I think you can get away with a little bit of Melo or Derek Jones Jr. in tournaments, but I wouldn't really go crazy, especially at 5,500 for Derek Jones Jr.
All right. Anything else from this game?
No, I think we nailed it.
All right. Keep an eye on the news as always, but especially with this Denver and Chicago game. Like I said, strong possibility it gets postponed and it becomes a 6-game slate. But I'll have all games written up for the game-by-game article on Monday morning at FTN Daily. Joe will have the 5 stats article and, of course, all the live streams, all the content. And we'll also be recording 2 episodes of the Chalk Fade the Chalk podcast with D-Bro. We'll be doing a first-round NFL mock draft, which will be fun. And then we'll also be continuing our prospect profile series with Memphis running back Kenneth Gainwell. So hopefully you guys are enjoying those. Check out the FTN Fantasy NFL Draft Hub. It's a page where we have a ton of content, prospect profiles, free agency articles, dynasty stuff, trade targets. It's a bunch of stuff. It's great. And look, perfect time too, because it's almost the all-star break for basketball. Baseball starting soon, but you can get really caught up on the NFL draft stuff as basketball hits the all-star break, which is going to be weird because I feel like it's the least excited anybody's been for the all-star break ever.
Whether it's players or fans. I'm typically usually very excited for it.
Right. And like half the players probably don't want anything to do with it, which I totally get. They're still going to have a dunk contest, I saw. Like, I don't know. I don't know how to feel about it, but we'll be.
Quick before we sign off, if they don't have Ja Morant, Anthony Edwards, Zion Williamson, and Miles Bridges in the dunk contest, I will not be watching.
Didn't you? They already announced a couple people, I thought.
Did they? I must have missed that. Who did they announce?
I'm going to look it up right now because I'm pretty sure they did, and I don't believe any of those players were on the list, which. God. I mean, it's tough when, three of those players are like cornerstones for their teams.
Yeah.
It's like, do you really
Bridges
want
is also, I believe Miles Bridges has been in one as well.
Bridges has been in one. Bridges is dope. I think Bridges is like the best in-game dunker that nobody talks about in basketball.
Especially because you have LaMelo Ball throwing you lobs.
Yeah. Which you would think the other Ball brother would do with Anthony Simmons, Obi Toppin, Cassius Stanley. I believe Cassius Stanley isn't even in the NBA.
Is this a joke?
No.
What? All right, I'm not watching.
Shams reported it. March 7th is the dunk contest or the All-Star game or whatever. I know Cassius Stanley is a I don't even know. I'm not going to lie. I don't even know who Cassius Stanley is. He's a rookie from the Pacers. He is joining Anthony Simons and Obi Toppin in the dunk contest.
I don't think I've ever seen Anthony Simons dunk a basketball.
Toppin might be fun, but yeah, that's safe to say that's probably not who the NBA fans want to see in the dunk contest.
Dude, there's a high chance the NBA casuals have only maybe heard of one of these players.
Yeah, like I'm almost embarrassed that I didn't know who Cassius Stanley was, but like I don't know every player, but at least it's not Shaquille O'Neal. Do you see that they have the when Shaq can't even name the first player's name, and it's like legitimate player, like Rashawn Holmes, you didn't know.
It's really bad. Like they're at this point, I love Inside the NBA, but they're more personalities than they are analysts.
100%. But yeah, that's a dunk contest. So we will see. Got a couple pods this week, and then we're off for the All-Star break. So if you don't see us, that's why. But we'll still have plenty of content. Baseball starting. We have a lot of fantasy baseball, divisional previews, team previews, stuff like that, all over the site. So check it out. Get up, subscribe to the website. You will win a lot of money playing daily fantasy, season-long fantasy, betting, all that great stuff. For Joe, I'm Adam. Have a good one. Peace out. We'll talk to you guys on Tuesday.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of the FTN NBA Podcast with Adam and Joe. Please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast.